The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The news never stops. Life goes on around town and around the world. You need a talk show that keeps track of it. A program with bold opinions that's always open to your views. That is this show. Welcome to the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
All right. Welcome, everybody. Come on in. Hour number two. So here's maybe my second suggestion on what you can do for your entertainment dollar this weekend. My first was to go to Lava Cantina tonight to see Back in Black, best AC/DC cover band in America, and see Metal Shop with my buddy April Samuels on the drums, doing all your 80s hair band classics. Or you can go to the movies. Civil War opens today. One of our sales manager folk said he was going to see like an early sneak of that like last night. He was going to tell me what, because there are two things I expect in the Civil War movie. It's a near future dystopian kind of thing. States are seceding from the Union. Don't get me started. But interestingly, I think it's a couple of them are Texas and Florida, but I think they're seceding for liberal reasons, which doesn't make, because the bottom line is the president is a Trumpian, at least it looks this way in the previews, a Trumpian, supposedly autocrat, power hungry monster played by Nick Offerman, and the states are seceding to avoid his craziness. So anyway, two things. I think it's going to be interesting, but I need to know if it's going to politically beat me to death. So that Civil War at the movies, I'll play the trailer and read a review of that. So we got all kinds of things going on. Right now, though, you know the one thing that's going on. No matter what you're doing to begin your weekend, there's one overarching fact. It's Friday.
Wow! I feel good. I feel good. Ow! I feel good.
I feel good.
I feel good.
You want me to say I feel good?
I feel good.
There are three ways you can work your way into my musical heart. You can sing songs. You can write songs. You can play instruments on songs. I think that's the big three, right? This guy does it all. Vince Gill is 67. Everybody's Sweetheart from the Way Back Home, his second album, 1987. So good. It was the next album, When I Call Your Name, that really just rocketed him. Although that was a top 10 record, and Let's Do Something was off of Cinderella was a top 10 record. Cinderella is great. She's just tired of being Cinderella. She don't play that game no more. So early Vince Gill, go get some early or late stage Vince Gill, whatever you want to do. It is Vince's birthday. And I mean, and he's out touring with the Eagles. Such a gifted guy that he's out doing some of the vocals and the guitars and stuff, like, because Glenn Frey has passed. And, you know, it's just, they're just looking, and he's just that good and just that talented. And I just love it, love it, love it. Because there are three, there are great singers who never played an instrument, never wrote anything, but they're awesome anyway. There are great songwriters who didn't perform their own stuff and didn't play anything, and then I love them. And there are great instrumentalists, you know, your Jimmy Page, your Buddy Rich, you know, on the guitars or the drums, or, you know, John Lord of Deep Purple on the keyboards, who played stuff but may or may not have written and didn't sing. Any one of those things. Any one of those things is awesome. But you sing like that, you play like that, you write songs like that. That's some Mount Rushmore stuff. So happy birthday to Vince Gill. All right. I'll hop to the movie here in a second because I am filled with curiosity about it. Maybe did any of y'all see a sneak of this? Have you seen anybody go see Civil War? Like, were there midnight shows or anything? Because like, a lot of times movies usually open on Fridays. And sometimes there'd be like a technicality where you get like a midnight Friday. Hey, it's Friday. But sometimes they're, I think they're like Thursday, 6 p.m. showings and stuff like that. Kirsten Dunst is in it, and she's a brave journalist. I'm fine with movies with brave journalists because guess what? Every once in a while, there are brave journalists. But it, again, in the preview, it's like, you're going to Washington? They shoot journalists on sight down there. It's like, oh, Lord, here we go. So I don't know. I don't know. We'll see. And I will see it over the weekend and report back to you on Monday. Civil War, the movie. There's Kirsten Dunst. Is she married to Jesse Plemons? Jesse Plemons, great actor. He's like in everything, and he's in everything she's in, where a bunch of people are working their way across the burnt out husk of middle America. And after violence has broken out, and a guy just draws down on him with a big old rifle and says, wait a minute, hey, we're Americans. Oh, yeah? What kind of Americans? Okay. So certainly has things that resonate with these times, and so we will see how that works out. So we're evaluating how things have worked out over our history and through sort of the lens of what the OJ trial revealed to us on the occasion of his passing. Day before yesterday, announced at the very end of yesterday's show, he was 76. Before we get to some of my societal and legal and racial and cultural observations, a word about the reactions. Magic Johnson tweeted out that, prayers for his family. He has five kids, right? And some grandkids. And I think it was something like praying for them at this difficult time. And Magic, got torched for that by some. I mean, you've got to really be careful with any observation about social media because the seamy underbelly of people just being jerks will always present itself in social media. But it was a lot. And it was like, what? And I saw and heard a lot of people, let's say supposedly folks of faith, sort of making references about, I guess, OJ gets to rot in hell now, or, OJ can say hi to Hitler. I mean, just stuff like that. Again, the excesses of social media. I do not know about OJ's fate in the afterlife. I do know what the rules are. I know what scripture says, but I don't know what he did or did not do in order to secure his place. But if you are someone who believes in God's word, redemption and defeat over death is available to everyone, and everyone means everyone. So there was some, shall we say, solidly unchristian things out in the world of social media, to the surprise of no one. And a lot of it's just venting. A lot of it's venting. It was venting. Talk about human nature. This is human nature, too. It's really frustrating when somebody actually gets away with murder. It just really is. We'd like to think that doesn't happen. And it does. And it just made it exponentially worse when OJ gets off of killing two people because of a jury's racial revenge. Because they were all still twisted off about the Rodney King cops verdict. It's like, what? Okay. I mean, make that point, but not that way, by perverting justice and, further in a case of jury revenge. So when we wrapped up the last hour, we were talking about how the 90s then became the aughts, and we elected our first black president. Yay, us. And by the way, as Obama won, was that an important moment in history? Of course it was, in and of itself, just as it will when we get our first woman president, our first Jewish president, our first whatever. History, histories. And it's funny because people talk about barriers. We knock down another barrier. I don't really think of it as a barrier anymore. from a few decades back all the way to the birth of America, yes, at definite barrier. You know, women weren't going to be president because women have only been voting for a little over 100 years. Black guy was not going to be president in the 20s or the 40s or the 50s or whatever. You know, the time came and then it happened. Now, I mean, is there a barrier now to a woman president? I don't think so. Is there a barrier now? I don't think that the barriers, we have choices. We make our choices. And listen, I'm the guy who tells you time and time again that almost nothing is about race anymore. Because, you know, the folks, the black voters who voted for Barack Obama, they hate Alan West. They got no use for Clarence Thomas. So, but they love Clinton. So it's not about race anymore out there, you know, in the real world of real people leading their real lives. But it was about race to Barack Obama, who never missed an opportunity to talk about, you know, people who look like me don't tend to be on, you know, United States currency and stuff like that. People who look like me, people who, Trayvon, you know, would have looked like my kid. It's like, wait a minute, what? It was always about race for him. Because as the Democrats began to realize, and this has been a story of some decades in the telling now, that they were losing on a whole lot of issues, taxes, spending, and then extrapolate further to today, borders, education, gender, climate, abortion. Well, I know they might not be losing so much on abortion, which is why we need to be careful. But it's like we better make everything about race. We'd better portray America as a racist hellhole, because that's the only way we can maintain power. You got to have Democrats to keep America from sliding into the clutches of these evil, racist Republicans like Donald Trump. I mean, Reagan got hit with this. There wasn't a racist bone in Reagan's body. Every Republican gets hit with this because it's all they've got. So, point being, here we are today. It has not been linear. If from the mid-60s, Civil Rights Act, to the mid-90s, O.J. trial. It's not like everything like got reversed as of that moment and it's been nothing but retreat ever since. But that was a wake-up call that there was a strain of activism that was going to grab our justice system by the neck and pervert it for racial revenge. And then you get from the 90s into the aughts, into the 2010s, into the nows, and you have actual people walking around talking reparations. You have George Floyd's ghost renaming sports teams. We're just not able to handle anything like grown-ups anymore. We're just not able, because race relations have taken a retreat back into the toilet because of this kind of activism. I mean, at the time of George Floyd's death in police custody, an entire country stood ready to go, whoa, that was something bad happened there. Let's examine it and see what it is and have that not happen anymore in municipal police departments. Nah, but we had to have some rioting. And that just waylaid everything. It just stopped everything. Then all of a sudden, it was all about the rioting, all about the rioters, all about the non-punishment of the rioters. So talk about an opportunity lost in the hands of just crazy activism. And things like this and the new fresh separatism and the, you know, CRTs and DEIs and all of it, it has been poisonous to race relations. So I don't know. I hold out hope that the pendulum can start swinging back. I'll tell you what, let me take a pause and let me sort of, obviously all this is out there for you to comment on to whatever degree you like. Passing of OJ, lessons of race and justice and culture. Did the imagery of the past week in the presidential race, I mean, I guess there's Biden at various state dinners, but the juxtaposition, the counterpoint to that is Trump at Chick-fil-A just getting mobbed by young black folks who love him. Should strike fear into the hearts of the Biden campaign. A little bit of that imagery next, 8:23. Before I get to the competing images of who Joe Biden was dining with and who Trump was hanging out with this past week. Just a quick story before we get into Nikki Whaley in the newsroom. Little sting in the police. Speaking of the police. Little message in a bottle as the theme music for this. Have you ever thought about it? It's almost like a cartoon. You're trapped on a desert island, and so you go get, you know, palm tree, palm fronds. What a great word that is, frond. I remember we were in Panama City. My mom was born in Alabama, raised in Panama City. And we were visiting grandma, and I made some reference to palm tree leaves, and he said, uh-uh. That's where I got this. He said, uh-uh, those are fronds. And not a ton of palm trees in Panama City. They're sort of the cabbage palms. They can get pretty tall, but then sort of the panhandle palm trees. Nope, that's a frond. So I've had that word in my head. So anyway, you get a bunch of palm fronds, and you spell out help on the sand and hope that somebody sees you. That is exactly what happened. Three guys went on a fishing trip out of Polawat Atoll, Micronesia, and as that nation's name suggests, it's just a smattering of little teeny tiny islands, and the United States Coast Guard got called in to help look for those guys. Three guys, all in their 40s, went to go fishing, got lost, 7 days, eating coconuts and drinking rainwater, and out of Guam, a P-8 Poseidon found them, plucked them up, and they're fine. So thank you, U.S. Coast Guard. Guys spelling out help with palm fronds on the sand. So, hey, it can work. All right, here's something that always works, bottom of the hour news, and then something that's really working well. The Trump Man of the People campaign imagery, what that looked like this week. Things from the week gone by, 866-660-5759. Mark Davis, 830. Here's Nikki. I mean, come on. What am I supposed to do? Magic carpet ride? I don't think so. It's John Kay's birthday.
Get your motor running. Head out on the highway. Looking for.
I think my parents took me to Easy Rider. Is that a CPS call?
Yeah, darling, go,
I don't think I understood it.
Take the world in a loving place. Buy all of the guys.
Born to be wild, Steppenwolf. What a great, great record. Yeah, did that, is that really true? I mean, I know they took me to The Godfather in 1972. I'm 14. some explaining to do there. I guess a lesser offense, I was 16 for The Exorcist. Yeah, I don't know what my parents were thinking. Well, actually, they said, hey, let's take the kid and show him what cinema is. And I remember the first, mom and dad took me to A Man for All Seasons, and I didn't understand it like at all, like Richard Burton, 1966 or something. But I felt like something important was happening in front of my face. I felt like this was acting. I felt like this was, it just gave me the most incredible appreciation. And we had this theater. We drive up up from the Maryland suburbs to the KB Cinema, on Wisconsin Avenue, close to Georgetown. And believe you me, seeing The Exorcist at that, steps away from the steps, if you get my drift, you know, where old, Father Karras meets his end, going boom, 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 down those steps at near Prospect and M Street. But four years before The Exorcist, I think the first movie they took me to, and listen, we had, you know what, everybody has the theater of your youth, right? The movie theater of your youth. It's often a mall, and it wound up being a mall for me, you know, later on in life, Landover Mall, Iverson Mall, there in Prince George's County, Maryland. But it was the On Base Theater at Andrews. And it was like, you know, being in a big living room with about 50 seats or something like that. So that's where I saw a whole lot of movies close to the house, circa, you know, 68, 69, 70, 71. But when Patton came out, George C. Scott as Patton, and that massive American flag that opens Patton, and you hear the clop, clop, clop of his boots as he climbs the steps. You don't see him. Clop, clop, clop. And then his head appears, and then his body, you know, as he comes up the stairs onto a platform, ostensibly to address the troops. And that flag is, how big is that screen at the KB Cinema? KB Cinema, it was the Uptown, excuse me, the Uptown. And I was 12, so it just looked like it was as tall as a skyscraper. That might have been 40, 50 feet. I don't know. And that flag, whoom, and the screen was curved, came around us. I mean, just a mild curve, but nonetheless, it just made it even more cool. Oh, saw 2001 Space Odyssey in that thing. Oh, Nelly. So anyway, there's the flag, and George C. Scott gets up there, and I don't know what's coming. All I know is a Patton, World War II general. Okay, let's see what happens. Like 2.5 hours later, I'm so blown away. Remains one of my favorite movies of all time. And there's George C. Scott, you know, 20 feet tall George C. Scott, saying the point of war is not to die for your country. The point of war is to have the other dumb SOB die for his country. Except he didn't clean it up like that. I just like, this is awesome. So just crazy. What the heck got me? Oh, Easy Rider. So there, there's a little culture for you. It is, I think, a cultural appeal that is driving some of, I was listening to Hugh Hewitt this morning talking to Ben Domenech, and he said that the group making the move toward Trump away from Biden is voters of color with young kids. Huh. Go figure that. As Kamala Harris, the high priestess of the Church of Abortion, heads to Arizona, because Arizona is going to actually try to protect babies' lives. Oop, can't have that. Can't have that. Can't interfere with women's choices or abortion care or women's health care. But as all these things play out, this past week provided an interesting juxtaposition. In a way, it's a little unfair, because if you are president, no matter who you are, do you get to have state dinners? Of course you do. Does everybody get all dolled up in their finest finery? Because all finery is fine. In their most exquisite finery. And, you know, get to gather at a big state. Of course you get to do that. Every president does it. It's good to do that. Bring over foreign dignitaries, Japanese prime minister in this particular case. But the timing, I don't know. And I don't know if Trump plans this or if it just happens. He shows up at Chick-fil-A. So a little bit of audio. He shows up at Chick-fil-A. This is the now famous 30 milkshakes visit. How are you all doing? Is business good? You're all going to be rich. And they just loved it. And everybody working at this particular Chick-fil-A is like 19 and black. And they love the guy. And then the following day, Atlanta, it's like he's got the 30 milkshakes thing down. He comes in and says, it might be another 30 milkshakes. And this one woman, you'll hear her, and she's young, black, like 20-something, and says, don't pay attention to what the media say about you, Mr. President. We love you. Whoa, what? There you go.
Can I have 30 milkshakes and also some chicken? I'm going to take care of the customers. Good. Making a lot of money. Hello, everybody. Get ready for a milkshake. You got plenty of.
All right. I don't care what the media tells you, Mr. Trump. Thank we support you.
We support love you.
Okay, 4 p.m. We've been 4 p.m.
Come here, let me give you a hug.
It's just... Oh, my heavens to Betsy. So there you go. And experiencing that imagery last night on Laura Ingraham, the guest, and this is my gig at the moment. We had a little visit with Tim Scott earlier in the week, listening to him and just saying, okay. And I've certainly got a certain... tingle, you know, for the whole Sarah Huckabee Sanders prospect, but keep coming back to J.D. Vance, Ohio senator, on with Laura Ingraham last night talking about this very thing.
Well, for the simple reason, Laura, that their policies have benefited, the Biden administration policies have benefited billionaires, whereas Trump's policies benefited working people. So the contract.
The question was, how in the world can all the black people are supposed to hate Trump? How in the world is it that certain groups of people, irrespective of race, are starting to lean toward him?
This is really striking. If you think about what the elites in this country are asking for, they're asking for more cheap labor through unlimited immigration. They're asking for the end to any kind of tariff that would protect working class jobs and manufacturing. And of course, the Biden administration has been giving them that, and the Democratic Party has been giving them that for 30 years. Contrast that to Donald Trump at Chick-fil-A yesterday. Obviously, in that store, disproportionately black workforce. And if you look at the data on illegal immigration, Laura, it consistently shows that black Americans are the ones who suffer the most from unchecked migration.
Hello. What have I been telling you for years? It's funny, in speaking about both the Hispanic vote and the black vote, and both of which are supposed to be vociferously anti-Republican, the Hispanic culture, and if this is a stereotype, it's a good one, is very, very much about a work ethic. Law-abiding Hispanics should be the ones who are most twisted off at folks from south of the border getting into the country illegally while they are here legally. And as far as black Americans, and black unemployment under Trump was golden and has gone right back into the toilet under Biden. Of course, all kinds of things have gone into the toilet for people of every race under Biden. But illegal immigration poses an enormous risk to every race's employment prospects.
Because they're the ones who face the most wage competition from illegal immigration. So the contrast could not be clearer. The people's president trying to raise your wages and deliver prosperity, and Joe Biden hobnobbing with the billionaires because those are the people who benefit from his policies.
Now, there's a lot of talk about you, Senator, in the vice presidential speculation.
Hello.
For Trump. I know he had you on his list, and you know, if there's a list, but he said there was kind of a list, and you're on it. I know you're going to be very diplomatic, but it says that you're right up there. Reaction tonight to this new report.
From The Hill, article by Jared Gans at The Hill. Vance's background and consistent support for Trump since taking his Senate seat could position him as an ideal choice for the former president as he looks for a loyal running mate.
Laura, I've actually never spoken to the president about VP speculation. My simple answer is I want to help him however I can. If he asks me, of course, I would think seriously about it. It would be a great honor. I also am happy to support the agenda in the United States Senate. And regardless, Laura, to remember, my job is to serve the people of Ohio. Whether it's supporting Trump's agenda in the Senate or serving in some other role, we have got to bring good manufacturing jobs, good prosperity to the people of Ohio in the American heartland. For 40 years, we had a bipartisan consensus to ship jobs overseas to bring unchecked migration. Trump stopped that. And the real question for the Republican Party is whether we follow that lead and double down on that winning agenda,
wow,
or do we try to go back to the old ways? And unfortunately, Laura, as you know as well as I do, there is a critical component of the old guard of the Republican Party that wants to go back to the old ways. More immigration, more war, less good wages for American workers. Thank God Trump is there to push back against it.
Perfect answer. Are you interested in being vice president? We haven't talked about this. If he calls, we'll talk about that. In the meantime, I just want to keep my current job and do my best at that, serving the people of Ohio. Perfect answer. I got to tell you, I'm not like all in for J.D. Vance now, but there's something about generationally about Senator Vance, about Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders, about anybody. What about Kristi Noem? I had nothing against Kristi Noem. I just like Governor Sanders more. I don't know. Byron Donalds in Florida is like on the B list for me for this because I don't know. He's great too. There's just, anyway, and I guess we'll all find out soon. So, can't go a day without mentioning Rashee Rice. Turned himself into police yesterday. How'd that go? Next. People tell me, Mark, you don't play enough Icelandic rock and roll.
Turn your back, you're a broken man.
Problem fixed. Don't expect you to understand. These boys are good.
Just keep telling yourself there's no shame. They don't know.
It's Kaleo, K-A-L-E-O.
They don't know about you and I.
Straight out of Reykjavik.
By the stars.
No, that's not the album title. It's Hot Blood. Not Hot Blood Dead. That's Foreigner. All righty, all righty. So, look, if I got time to do this, yeah. Let me set this up. This is taking kind of forever, but listen, we talk about privilege, and in the whole OJ lesson, as we learn of his passing, there is no privilege like wealth and fame. You just might get away with murder. Rashee Rice doesn't appear is going to get away with the profound ill wisdom of grabbing a bunch of buddies. It's like, hey, I'll take this Lamborghini SUV that I'm renting for $1,700 a day. You take my Corvette, and we'll just load it up with weed and bad intentions and bad decisions, and go screaming up 75 on a busy Saturday. What could possibly go wrong? And the answer, of course, is everything. And since then, we have those weird couple of days where the story was, police are looking for him. Well, why can't they find him? And then they finally did, and warrant was issued, and he did indeed, in DeSoto, turn himself in yesterday. What happens now, and what does that mean, and other stories of the week gone by. Prepare to join us. 9 o'clock hour about to unfold. 866-660-5759. Mark Davis, 858.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.